Win £25,000 with Paddy's Pick 5. Pick 5 winners from our 5 races to win the jackpot. If it's not won, we'll roll it over to the following week. Play for free every Saturday. Pick 5 with Paddy Power.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to a very chilly From the Horse's Mouth as we look ahead to the weekend. It's cold. It's Friday morning. And Rory and Ruby, that's Rory Delarg and Ruby Walsh, are going to look ahead to quite a few races. Now, we're recording at 11:07 on Friday morning, so there's lots of inspections that are going to take place. What we're going to do is look ahead to as many races as possible. If by the time this podcast comes out, Haydock is gone or Taunton is gone or races that we are talking about is gone, we will get to some races that are on because we're going to talk about Saturday and Sunday. We'll go all the way through to Thurles on Sunday. So you will get some previews to racing that will happen. At least I think the Irish racing is going ahead, Ruby, this weekend. Yes, yes.
At present, yes. Navan have moved the chases too late on the card as purely in a precaution in case the chase track, which wouldn't have as much grass cover as the hurdle and bumper track, doesn't thaw, but they're pretty confident. And look, that's just the difference between Ireland and the UK PK as well. I mean, Navan use its whole track all winter, so it can move in on the fresh ground, whereas you continuously see flat and jump tracks separated in the UK. And then when you're racing on the same line the whole time, it does damage the grass, and the less grass you have, the more chance you have of getting frost in the soil. So look, Navan with a chase track that can't be moved, it only has a certain amount of ground on its chase course, have put them last in case, but that's just different track management.
You know what'll happen? It'll be a beautiful sunny day now. Sunny late evening. They'll omit about half the obstacles, but sure, look, sod's law if that happens. So they're doing their best in Ireland, Navan and Thurles. Thurles always goes ahead. Rory, how are you?
I'm not too bad. Not too bad. Yeah.
Still wearing a black jumper, I see.
Never not wearing a black jumper. People need to know what they're expected to see.
Yeah, we were told ahead of our first episode of the Cheltenham Countdown, which you can watch on the brand spanking new Paddy Power Racing YouTube channel, by the way. I would urge you to watch it. It's great fun. Rory and Ruby going over the novice hurdles. Producer Mark told everyone, wear something bright, guys, because the background's going to be dark. Rory DeLarge, you turned up in a black jumper. To be fair,
I did. I bought a brand new white shirt for the occasion. I just left it on the side.
It just, people wouldn't recognize you, to be fair.
I know exactly.
Who's your man in the white shirt? So look, do check out that YouTube channel, and you have a chance of winning a free bet if you comment, like, subscribe, all the usual stuff. It's great stuff. There's loads of good stuff on it. And we'll be back next Tuesday at around noon as well for episode number 2. Rory and Ruby back recording. We record on Monday and we'll be going hopefully be on the YouTube channel by about noon. Now, a few bits of housekeeping. Dublin Racing Festival, very much on the horizon. Well done to Rita Ryan and Mick Giver, who won last week's free tickets by simply quote tweeting any Paddy Power tweet about this podcast or this show, quote tweeting hashtag FTHM, all the usual. And they got into the draw and they won free tickets to Paddy Power Irish Gold Cup Day on the Saturday. More tickets are available. If you want to get more tickets, just do the same, folks. Retweet or quote tweet, I should say, any tweet about this podcast by Paddy Power or Paddy Power Racing, and you'll be in the draw. Use the hashtag FTHM to make sure producer Mark can pick it up. Another bit of note, Punters Panel is going to be back. Ruby, Rory, and also we're hopefully going to get Fran Berry in. We're going to make it easier. This is the show where we get you to pose all the questions to the lads. It's going to make it easier for you to get involved. Simply email FTHM@paddypower.com and producer Mark will pick up all those questions and he'll be in touch as to how you get involved. You won't have to be live on the show. We're going to make it easier and that's back. So do start getting your questions in about anything, about Rory DeLarge, what is your favorite race course?
It's just too easy to say Cheltenham, but it's the right answer, I'm afraid.
Is it? Yeah. Oh, okay. Ruby, favorite race course?
Yeah, obviously, the Cheltenham sticks out for everybody, but I'm a massive Punchestown man as well, PK.
Yeah, it's local. It's a local track. Sure. You grew up how far away?
4 miles.
Not bad. Not bad.
Closer to Nace, mind. It was easier to get to Nace than Punchestown.
Which now, Nace is a bloody nightmare whenever you're trying to get there, in and out.
My local track was Ayr.
Ayr?
As a crow flies, or probably as in terms of getting there, getting on the ferry from Larne. And just off the coast of Ayr. That's probably my closest track.
So that's closer than Down Royal or Down Patrick?
I reckon so. Although it's a tight enough one. But the other thing about growing up in North Antrim, up in the hills, is we could only get Scottish TV as well. So we got BBC Scotland and ITV. It wasn't called ITV Scotland then, was it?
STV?
But STV,
UTV, wasn't it? Ulster Television.
No, we couldn't get Ulster Television until the 1980s. So all my early sporting education came from people like Arthur Montfort.
I was going to say Doogie Donnelly.
Glenn Michaels Cavalcade, that's not really sport, but you know, that's what...
Okay, was Doogie Donnelly on around?
Doogie Donnelly, I was before Doogie Donnelly's time.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah. That's about as far back as I go, anyway. okay, so Scottish TV, Scottish BBC. Let's look at racing, lads. And as I said, if we start talking about a race that has already been abandoned, we will get to races that are going ahead. So just skip forward and you'll be able to find it. We're going to look at ITV's racing first. Haydock. Possibly going ahead. Let's go with it. Let's assume it is. The first race we're going to look at is the 130. It's the Supreme Trial. This is a money back race on side, folks. Money back if you're second, third, or fourth. As we record on Friday morning in this race, we're going 11-8. Pembroke, the favorite, who's unbeaten his last two. Chasing Fire, who is unbeaten for Ollie Murphy at 11-4. 9-2, Toothless for Paul Nichols. It's double figure odds the remainder. Ruby Walsh, off we go at Haydock.
Yeah, you'd have to be impressed with Pembroke at Ludlow in his last start. He came from well off the pace to beat Amron Sage, who has subsequently had a run for Nicky Henderson. And I was looking at this earlier, which really backed up the case of Pembroke. Amron Sage hasn't had a run since, but something behind him did. Look, he was impressed.
Yeah,
but
the third one.
Hard horse, wasn't
both
it?
Sides yeah. of that, yeah.
Yeah. But likewise, when I went digging into Chasing Fire, who probably visibly more impressed me than Pembroke, you could find a case for him too. And Chasing Fire is unbeaten in four starts. Three of those have been for Ollie Murphy. And I'm going to chance Chasing Fire to beat Pembroke.
11-4 as we record. Anyway, Rory?
Yeah, I was very impressed with Pembroke at Ludlow. I think that's a risk and throw out plenty of winners. It's true to say that Chasing Fire was more impressive. I'm not sure he beat an awful lot, but I think although we haven't seen Amron Sage since, he looks a decent handicap project. He's one to watch out for. Western Zephyr was favourite for that race. He'd made all to win over course and distance on his previous start, and he went out to make all again in that contest. He was sent off a reasonably short price favourite, but Pembroke brushed him aside and beat him 17 lengths. And you thought, well, maybe Western Zephyr isn't that good. But he's come out again in his next start and he has won just as well as he had on his debut. That was at Huntingdon, similar kind of track, and he won that readily. So I take the view that the bare form of the Ludlow race is better than it looks, whereas I'm not entirely sure about that market racing contest. Clearly, Chasing Fire was different class, but I think Pembroke is clearly very, very good. He won that... almost with his head in his chest at Ludlow, always travelling really strongly. I actually backed the favourite that day and I knew my goose was cooked a long way out. I would stick with Pembroke despite the fact that he's short enough at 11-8. I think he deserves to be a short price favourite and I prefer him to Chasing Fire.
They say a week is a long time in politics. Rory DeLargy on the podcast last week, you said no Dan Skelton horse.
And then he ran seven horses, had four winners, a second and a third, didn't he? So Dan Skelton definitely informed now, but I appear to be always on the wrong side of Dan, but there you go.
He's streaky. I mean, his Saturday form this season, Ruby, is just, it's amazing. Like, I know we talk about Sam Thomas aiming his horses for those big Saturdays, but from way back to the Weatherby meeting, it just seems to be there's a Skelton winner at least one every Saturday.
Yeah, but look, it's trainers also, PK, it's an advertisement business as well. You have to attract new owners, new clients, and new investment the whole time as well. And whilst obviously placing your horses to win races is a key part of training racehorses, the publicity that comes with training winners at the weekend when it's on television, definitely gains you more, and you have to always think, how do I get bigger? And training winners when more people are watching definitely helps you with that. I did find it interesting. I can't remember which trainer it was I was reading, but Nicky Henderson said earlier in the week that, look, it's not all about the Cheltenham Festival and more people are aiming their horses at different places. And that was to do with the fallen entries. Then the trainer at the end of the article highlighted how he trained X amount of winners through the year, but got 3 times the messages for training a winner at the Paddy Power meeting, or 4 times the messages, people saying well done because he'd had a winner at the November meeting in Cheltenham. So whilst people are saying it's not the be all and end all, well, if you want to get bigger and you want to catch up, Cheltenham is kind of where you have to be winning. And I just thought it was a bit of an ironic article as I read it.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I'll have to go back and read that. And what everyone wants to know, Ruby, what are your thoughts on Harry Skelton's celebration? Has it got a name yet? You know, when he sticks his two arms out and he takes his hands off the reins.
Are you really asking me, has some arm-waving antic got a name? Did you really ask me that question?
Well, producer Mark has given a name, or else it's just the Skelicopter.
Skelicopter, that's dreadful.
I'm pretty sure Ruby coined that.
I punched the air on numerous occasions and stood up on my irons, but fair play to Harry. First time at Ducks and he's sitting beside us.
It's going to happen where he's going to get, the horse is going to take a full step, isn't it? Anyway, look, it's good.
It doesn't even have to, it'll only be a horse goes by the line and Ducks from a photographer or a jacket or somebody or something, and the horse spots something that you haven't seen, which horses often do. It could happen with your two hands on the reins, but when it happens when you've no hands on the reins, the abuse will come. I did actually find it interesting how there has been this, and I did see what you're saying, and I couldn't believe you asked me, how there is this urge to give that celebration a name, where he drops his reins when he goes by the line, from several of the people who wanted to lynch Christoph Soumian when he went by the line in the Eclipse. So it was villainous from Christoph Soumian, and we give Harry Skelton's a name. I did kind of find that a bit ironic as well, while we're on it.
I'd like to think that he's going to be minimum 5 lengths clear when he does it every time, or be, I don't know, you know, who knows? We'd have to ask Harry.
But it's the same thing.
Yeah. Just dropping the reins. It's not really a helicopter, though. It's a plane. Like, he's doing his two arms. Mark, get back. Producer Mark, come on, come back to us. It's more of a plane than a helicopter. I'm not having a skelicopter.
You'll go skelly plane, then. That'll work.
Does it?
No, it doesn't. No.
All right. As you can tell, we're kind of rambling under the assumption some of these races may be off. Let's go back to the so-called Champion Hurdle trial. And we've got a Champion Hurdle winner, to be fair, in Epatanta. And this is a great opportunity for her. She's 4-7 as we record. I like to move at 11-4. A little bit disappointing last time out. Manel Drama 10s, Nelson 14s, 25s, Jason Milton 40-1 for pleasure. All right, Epatanta to lose, Rory. I know that's not the type of bet you're going to have, 4-7. But what are we thinking?
I thought the only bet you can have in this race at the prices, and it's a very risky one, and there's a lot to discuss about why he is where he is at the moment, was Jason the Militant.
Oh.
I couldn't be back in Epitone at the price she is. And you've got to bear in mind, this is heavy ground that's been under covers for the best part of a week as well. So not ideal conditions to be trying to buy money with a class horse. And we've seen top-class horses struggle in this race before. Of course, 2 years ago, Bouverdere was beaten at a similar price. Never looked like getting involved. So, you know, I couldn't be back in one at odds on. I don't think I like to move it. Will be particularly happy on really bad ground either. You know, he handles quick ground well. He'd probably get away with it, but again, he's a short enough price, conceding weight to her as well. The one horse who will love the ground is Jason the Militant. Now, he's been sold for 50 grand since we last saw him, and that was the online Thoroughbred sale in December, wasn't it? So it's just an unusual sale to send a high-class horse to. Maybe that's the future. I don't know, but it was an interesting one. New owners have picked him up. They paid for the two top lots from that sale as well. So you'd be slightly suspicious of whether you think Jason the Militant is as good as he was. But in fairness, he was running well in Listed Company in the summer on the flat. I would happily forgive his run at Tipperary in October and good ground, because he's much better on softer, heavy ground, Jason the Militant. And some of his efforts, including on the flat, you know, he was an impressive Listed winner at Nace in October 2021. He showed this season that he retains plenty of ability. They were happy to run him in the Irish St. Ledger not that long ago. So I think you take a chance on him. He's going to be 20-1 and bigger.
Yeah, he's 25.
His best form gives him a big chance of going close here. He's as I said, you wouldn't be backing him each way, and you wouldn't be backing him anti-post for anything, because we don't quite know where we stand. But he's the only one I could get involved in here at those prices.
I was literally going to say, at the risk of being called a mug for the second podcast in a row, would we be going each way at 25 to 1? But apparently we wouldn't. So that's fine. That's fine. Jason Milton, win only 25 to 1. Ruby?
I can't see beyond Epatant, but Rory has made a compelling case for me to maybe look at Jason the Militant without her.
Yeah, of course, we can play in the all betting without market, no doubt, if you do fancy that. Yeah, and that price, that'll be priced up shortly. By the time you listen to this, it may already be priced up. So Epatant first, Jason the Militant second, maybe for Ruby, or the other way around, and Rory going with a potential shock with Jason the Militant. One more race to look at Haydock, the Peter Marsh and Fontaine Collonge and Bristol de Meyer disputing favouritism for this. Oh, Bristol de Meyer loves it round here, as we know. But Izzy, the horse of old, 3-1 Empire Steel, Dr. Kanaga 8-1 and 9-1 bigger the rest. Empire Steel has been well backed. Back to you, Ruby, for the Peter Marsh.
Yeah, and I'm taking a chance on one. I'm definitely taking a chance on stamina with this horse, but his last run at a distance was in November of 2021, and that was at Newcastle, where Winds of Fire beat Cooper's Cross. Now, I'd say Sam Coulthard, if he was to ride that one again, probably would have won on Cooper's Cross. He set sail off the bend going to the fourth last in Newcastle, and Adam Wedge let him by in Winds of Fire and pegged him back after he made a mistake in the second last. Now, he's snuck up the weights a long way since that day with some decent runs, albeit all at 2.5 miles and 2 miles and 5 furlongs. He's an 8-year-old. There's a big chance that was in November 2021. When he last ran at a distance. He's an older horse now. I'd be hoping he can stay. He does look progressive to me. And with cheap pieces on for the first time, I'm going to take a chance on Cooper's Cross.
Okay, Cooper's Cross. He's 9-1 as we record. We're going each way, Ruby. I know it's a two-place race, so I'm going to again be called a mugger. You're going to win only.
I'm glad you stuck that two-place in there, because I look, but you know, you have 6 runners. To be in the first two, yeah, I probably could see him being in the first two, PK. Okay. I think Empire Steel ran stinking the race last year. Bristol de Meyer, he's a great old horse, but looking 12 stone at 12 years of age. And Dr. Canangan, maybe. Be interested to see what Rory tips. If Rory goes for the favourite, I'd be saying, yeah, definitely Cooper's Cross each way.
Okay, Rory?
Well, I guess this is maybe a little bit hard overhead, but there's no bigger fan of Bristol de Meyer than me. And although he's 12 now, we've seen plenty of life in some of these veterans, and I don't think he was disgraced at all in the Betfair Chase at Haydock last time out. The Grand National was a write off for him a couple of seasons ago, where Darrell, you know, sensibly just took him around the outside and hunted him around and wanted to look after him. He disappointed at the back end of last season. He always has done. He always has done throughout his career. He's a horse you want to catch reasonably fresh. Nigel Tristan-Davis is typically bullish that he's as good as he ever has been. He won the national trial here last year. Of course, he actually finished second in that, but the winner was subsequently disqualified. But he was rated 159 there, and he's beaten the rest of them pointless. He's down to 154. I still think he's got the class to win this. I didn't want to be with him. I was with Empire Steel last year, I think, in this race, and he disappointed me. I can't really be with him again. Dr. Kananga, again, I was with him at the entry. I thought he'd run a really big race there, and he stopped quickly. I think he did too much in front. The front runners didn't really get home in the Beecher Chase, and he might bounce back and he will handle this ground. But I was slightly concerned about the form of Ben Clark's horses as well. So, I mean, the obvious one against the favourite is Fontaine Collonge. And she, despite doing most of her racing at up to 2.5 miles, she looked like she stayed really well when scoring over course and distance in November. That was a much lesser race, off a mark of 1.32. But she, when she ran at Kempton in that handicap chase over Christmas, she looked like she wanted more of a test again. So she's an obvious player with 10 stone 9 getting plenty of weight. She's up £5 for her win, but she'll handle it and she'll run well. But I couldn't forgive myself if I went against Bristol de Meyer in a race like this. It'd feel like treason. So I'm going to stick with him. I completely respect Ruby going for Cooper's Cross. It's just a shame that he's £6 wrong, because he's definitely got another big race in him, has Cooper's Cross. Whether this is just a bit too much of a test for him, with, you know, being out of the way, it's against this class of opposition, I'm not sure. He's a horse, you know, he'd be a pretty obvious contender for something like the Topham in the spring if he got a bit of dig in the ground. And he's a horse that I still would have on side and handicap. So I just thought this might be a little bit tough for him. He's wearing cheek pieces for the first time, which I rarely think that's a massive positive, but you can see that Stuart Coulthard's putting them on to try to get any advantage he can. But for me, Bristol De May is I'm slightly more loyal to him than I am to the wife, to be honest. And it would feel like a betrayal if I didn't touch him here.
She's an avid listener, I assume, to the pod.
I think you can safely assume she will not hear those words.
Nor is she in the background, obviously. Okay, right. Bristol De May, can't let him go, Rory, and Cooper's Cross for Ruby. We're going to take the most cursory of cursory glances at two races at Taunton. The reason being Taunton's inspect today when we record. So there's an extra place race at 2:30. It's 25 grander, Rory. I asked you to look at this race under the assumption I thought Adolf could be gone. So give us one in the extra place race.
Yeah, a lot of these coming into the race out of form or high in the weights. Lox Cornish liable to be favourite. I think he's going to find this tougher than when winning lesser races at Catterick and Ayr, and I wanted to be against him. The horse that I ended up coming down on was Master Debonair, who doesn't have much of a chance on the form that he's shown in his last couple of starts. But he's only had the one run for Christian Williams, which he needed quite badly, I thought, at Fosse Lass. He went without his usual tongue tie that day. It really struck me as a kind of a getting to know you run. And although he dropped out quite quickly off before the home turn, he did stay on very late in the day to pass a couple. He also went right up the inside, which is not what you want to do in bad ground at Fosse Lass. And he actually finished second in this race last year off a 5 pounds higher mark. So I think there's a race in him for Christian Williams. I think Christian he's exactly the kind of horse that Christian Williams would do well with. He probably needs a change of scenery. That training on the beach would be ideal for a horse like Master Debonair. He was a grade two hurdle winner, of course, as a novice, but rather lost his way since. I thought he was worth persevering with. Maybe he'll need another run before he hits a peak, but I thought you're liable to get 20 to 1 or bigger about him, and I thought he might be worth risking.
Okay, we are going each way in an extra place race. I've decided, Rory, before you call me a mug. Ruby, unless you've something this, give us something for the Portman Cup at 3:17.
No, I was with the same horse. I was with Katie's Light last Saturday, each way, who ran into third at Kempton and showed a bit of spark. So I think Christian's horses, he hasn't been having many runners, are starting to come to the boil. And I was with the same horse, actually.
That is interesting.
This is his time of year, and it's also... You know, if you're going to back any trainer after a big freeze when people maybe have struggled to keep the horses on the go, Christian would be the ideal man for that because he's got the perfect place to gallop them on the beach.
First time you agree on the pod this week, and I bet the race won't go ahead. Right, Portman Cup.
Stick him in the tracker.
Stick him in the tracker, that's true. Frodon is even money favourite for the Portman Cup. Quick Wave, 9-4. Bryony Frost and Pollock. Pollock has won this with, what was the name of that horse? The ex-Venetia Williams horse a few times.
Yalanki,
thank you. Yeah, used to always win it with this. Different horse though, Frodon, isn't he, Ruby? Very different to Yalanki.
Yeah, and Frodon's negative here will be the ground. Slow ground was blamed for... Well, it wasn't blamed, was used as an excuse in Leopardstown last year. After frost, ground gets really dead, hard work. That's the negative, but he's a long way clear at the ratings. He's 162 rated horse. And, you know, the wolf, maybe, it's just hard to make a case for the horses below him. I mean, Quick Wave, I'm not sure he's really up to it. Ramsey the Tie is nearly as old as Frodon, if not older. He's just hard to oppose Frodon. But the ground would be a slight concern.
Rory?
Yeah, I think, again, if you sort of look through Frodon's soft ground form, his best form is on a slightly better surface, but he's run well enough. I mean, he ran well enough in the King George last year in soft ground when he'd gone far too hard in front. Even a repetition of that would send him close here. And I don't think Ramses the Tie has got quite the speed to lie up with Frodon. So Frodon should get the lead. And then what Bryony will try to do, she'll try to go hard early and then just nurse him through the race. 3.5 miles is also further than he wants to go as well, or further than he wanted to go at his peak. So that's a slight question as well. But you just get the impression that Bryony will see this as a task, getting him to the front, bossing them, but trying to save a little bit from Frodon. And if you watch this race back the last few years, it's, you know, she'll just get him in a rhythm around. Taunton's fences can be a little bit tricky, but he's the kind of horse who will be gaining ground in the air, unless the ground turns really bad. I think he probably gets away with it. The other one I would consider is Quick Wave. I know she pulled up in the Welsh National, but anything that was held up in the Welsh National, was a write-off from very early on in the race, as tends to be the case. So I put a line through that. She's the kind of mare I kind of wanted to be against in handicaps, because I thought she was slightly flattered by how easily she won at Sandown on her reappearance. But this obviously isn't a handicap, and she's suited by the weights compared to the others. So I thought she was the one to throw down a challenge, and she will stay every yard. So if it turns into a real test of stamina, then maybe Quick Wave will put it up to Frodon. But I think Bryony will be determined to make it as much of a test of speed and jumping as she can, and she probably manages to do that.
All right, tentative enough votes for Frodon, and even money there from the two lads, I think it's fair to say. That's the Portman Cup if it goes ahead, 3:17 Taunton. Now, as Ruby said, Navan are going to go ahead, which is great news, and there are some pretty interesting runners at Navan on a Saturday, I think it's fair to say. Rory, you chip in when you want. I think you're going to come in at the handicap hurdle, but I want to talk about a few of the Willie Mullins runners. First off, in the rated novice hurdle, Willie Mullins trains Intranet in the JP Silks with Paul Townend on board.
He does. What did I read Facile Vega's rating was? 153?
That's the official rating given, is it?
I think it was. Did you read that, Rory?
I believe so, yes, but don't quote me.
No, don't quote. I think it was 153. But look, I'm only looking at Pat DeRue and Intranet. So looking at this race, that basically has Pat DeRue at 132 and Intranet then at 130. Now, they were 28 and 33 lengths behind Facile Vega, who's a rating of 153, just going roughly at a pound a length. That wouldn't suggest either Pat DeRue or Intranet are well in, or maybe it suggests Facile Vega is extremely well in. But just doing those maths, it doesn't add up. And I was impressed with Landrake. I thought he beat Corbus Cross, albeit getting weight off him for having not won a bumper at Clonmel, and then beat Dove Latour at Ferry House quite impressively. I think he'll make these two go, Pat DeRue and Intranet, and he's a slightly fresher horse coming to the race.
All right, so Landrake, the selection, Davey Russell and Gordon Elliott. Producer Mark confirms you are correct with that rating for Facile Vega.
That's just making it kind of roughly, yeah. Rory, I mean, 153 minus 20 is 133. So like that still leaves Pat DeRue. If you're going literally through Facile Vega, he should be in the 120s.
Yeah.
Facile Vega in a county off 153 if you get another couple of runs into him.
He can, he could do.
The next state, man. All right, that's the opener on the card at Navan. The 12:32, there's two in it for Willie. You've got Amy Deji, which Danny will ride, is at a couple of runs. And in the Jigginstown colours, Shambali Kid, Paul Townend on board, Ruby.
Yeah, and they ran in the same race at Limerick behind Maiden Street Prince, who ran behind Gaelic Warrior during the week. Safura won last weekend at Punchestown, so he's improved. But I think Shambali Kid could be the one that will improve more than Amy Deje for that run in Limerick. And we expect Shambali Kid to step forward. Now, Food of Brazil was behind him, and he stopped to a walk at Clonmel during the week. So I think Shambali Kid would be the one that would improve more than Amy Deji, and I can see why Paul Townend has picked him.
Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of eyebrows, well, not a lot of eyebrows, some people will go, well, he was behind him and he's not riding him, but
sure. Watching the race again, and if you just look even at Shambali Kid, he seemed to make a mistake somewhere up the back straight and lost his position, had quite a bit of ground to make up down the hill in Limerick and made it up quite quickly and then emptied out. So I can see why Paul has gone for it.
Fair enough. One of the big races Saturday is the beautifully titled Navan Handicap Hurdle. This race, 40 grand in the pot, so it's a great B race. Going to get both of your thoughts on this. Looking at the potential market here, Lucky Max, HMS Seahorse, Grand Wa, they're all going to be pretty strongly fancied. I'll go to you, Rory, because I know you've got one of this.
I'm going for
number 11 just before.
Oh, you indeed. Fair enough. I thought this is more of a partly a this would be nice to see, but I thought in terms of solidity of recent form, I'm not sure she's got an awful lot in hand of the handicap. But I thought Carrigane Lotus was interesting for Liz Lawler, Conor Quirk taking £7 off. Probably needed the run on her return. Over fences and is back over hurdles now, but ran pretty well off this market Cork in the spring, and I thought she would be she was well enough wasted to hit the frame here at the very least, and it'd be a popular win as well because it'd be Liz's if she does win, it'd be Liz's first win since she had that bad point to point fall, so I'm sure that would go down pretty well. But I thought she was pretty solid in terms of the form. She's she's consistent, if not exactly a win machine. She's from that very, very good family of the Lawlers. And she's not going to mind if the ground gets very deep as well. So I thought on ground that must be close to heavy and a few of these, you know, carrying biggish weights, with her down on 9 stone 7, including the claim, I thought she was very competitive.
You gave Conor Quirk, you gave Cian Quirk a good mention on the Road to Cheltenham on Thursday in Racing TV, Ruby.
Yeah, look, he gave the horse a great ride in Punchestown last Sunday, and I thought he was really good at Metamorphosis then during the week as well. Solomon Lane, obviously, last Sunday, and Metamorphosis on Monday at Punchestown. And he's worth these £7, which definitely gives Carrigan Lotus a squeak. It's hard to fancy Bell Metal. She ran really disappointingly at Limerick over Christmas behind Missy. But she is back at Navan, where she won a maiden hurdle, anyway. She won a bumper at Navan as well. No, one a bumper at Nace, but one a maiden hurdle at Navan, so maybe horses for courses. But I thought Barna Cullia was interesting. Was a long way behind Gaillard de Mesnil in a grade one novice chase at Limerick or at Leopardstown over Christmas. Prior to that, had chased home Midnight Run in the Craddockstown novice chase. And before that, had beaten Punitive at Galway in a rated novice chase. Now, Punitive was rated 129 on that occasion, and they ran off level weights. So, you know, just looking at Barna Cullia in off 120, I thought Barna Cullia had a chance. Jordan Gale for rides from Michael Mulvaney. I thought Barna Cullia was really interesting.
Two shouts each way prices you'd expect. Carrigeen Lotus for Rory and Barna Cullia. Myself and Fran have a podcast. We release it on Thursdays. It's for Dundalk. What we have to do is we have to use the irishracing.com tissue prices because we don't have Paddy Power prices at the time. Ruby, that Barna Cullia, very big price in the Irish Racing tissue. 33s. Would that surprise you?
I doubt it'll be 33-1. Okay. Michael Mulvaney and Navan and Jordan Game for riding it. I'll fall off my office chair here if it's 33-1. But if you can find me a bit of 33s BK, I would gladly take it.
We'll keep an eye.
The time form tissue, 50-1. But again, I think that's, you know, that's basically completely ignoring his chase form.
Okay.
And that's a dangerous thing to do. The one thing he will do, he will keep galloping to the line. I mean, it fell into his lap a little bit at Galway, I suppose, but he jumped better than most and he kept on very well from midfield, with a few of them, you know, struggling to get home. But that was on bad ground. It's going to be bad ground again, and he will be galloping when others have cried enough, to coin the phrase.
Juice Mark, please ensure this podcast does not go out before bookmakers have priced up that race, and we'll all get a bit of those 33s and 50s. Thank you very much. The bumper. We've got a 217. There's two for Willie in it. It's for me, Patrick's selection, Criminal Mischief, to be ridden by, tell me about, Mr. H. Sharef.
Hugo.
Hugo's
there for a good while. Obviously runs in Patrick's colours. Hugo might be going back to France, and that's why Willie and Patrick are giving him a ride before he goes back. That would be my initial thought, but I could be very wrong. But I would say Patrick, even though he owns Criminal Mischief, didn't have much problem getting off that gelding to ride his own, to ride It's For Me in the Simon Munir Isaac's Away colours. And he went.
Forecast? What's Criminal Mischief like? That's like Patrick Mullins owning his own horse and not riding it. I mean, that's like...
It's out of Dr. Machini. So did Patrick bred it. Patrick and Jackie maybe, by Shan too, but you know, It's For Me does everything really well as well.
Okay, It's For Me in the bumper. And what about A1, Paul Tannen?
It's For Me,
Patricci?
Is For Me.
Oh,
no,
A1,
A1, yeah. Paul rides A1. Tenzing was second to Ramilies at Turles. I'd say Tenzing is probably a stronger form. Sean O'Keefe rides him for Willie as well, but I thought Shan Truce would be the one. But second to Must Be Obeyed at Punchestown on New Year's Eve, Must Be Obeyed won at Ferry House again last week. So I think Shan Truce will make it third time lucky over fences.
That's the beginner's chase at 252, folks. Willie is two in A1 and Tenzing, as you heard. And Shan Truce is the selection. Okay, that is Navan finished. We're going to take the very quick break. And what we're going to do then is we're going to look ahead to Sunday under the assumption that Lingfield goes ahead, fingers crossed, and also Thurles, which will go ahead. So quick break, back in a second.
Here at Paddy Power, we want our gambling to be fun and encourage our customers to bet responsibly. That's why we offer a number of tools to help you stay in control, including the ability to set deposit limits, get reminders after a certain amount of time playing, and to take breaks. For more information, visit responsiblegaming.paddypower.com. 18 plus, begambleaware.org.
Right, let's look ahead to Linkfield on the assumption it goes ahead, which, fingers crossed, it does, because there is a huge amount of prize money on offer at Linkfield on Sunday. They've moved the Sovereign Handicap and also the Fleur-de-Lis Chase, which were due to run on Friday. So, huge amounts of money. Starting with, though, a £40,000 bumper on the all-weather. This should go ahead. They might cancel the rest of the race, but this should go ahead, Rory. I don't know if we're going to see a Cheltenham bumper horse in this, but we're going to see some nice types nonetheless. What are your thoughts?
I thought this was a tough race because you've got two of the most interesting ones are Elogio and Shinji, both very much flat bred, and they've both made winning debuts for other yards. So Tom Lacey has Elogio now, who made a winning debut for Richard Bandy over 2 mile 1 at Aintree. So, despite being by acclaim, he seems to stay fairly well. And he'd be a leading contender. I'm not sure what to make of Shinji, who was impressive at Fakenham on his debut for Roger Varian. He's a son of Kingston Hill. He'd been very ready for that. Won it in good style, but I'm not entirely sure how strong that race would have been. So, and whether he's the, I think he would have been absolutely cherry ripe for that debut. So I just prefer Elogio here, but I'm not sure that these polytrack bumpers are great betting mediums. So just obviously the race could go ahead, but I don't think they'll just run the bumper. Elogio would be a tip just for the sake of a tip. I wouldn't be backing in the race.
That's fair enough. So this goes off at 12 o'clock. So they'll run that. They'll inspect the course at 12:15 and call the rest of the racing off. Imagine that. Ruby, nothing in the bumper before I move to Fleur-de-Lis.
I was with the same horse, but again, moving all weather bumpers. Not just really. I thought Elogio kept at it well in Aintree, but that's all.
There's an interesting one for Sir Mark Prescott in the race. We're talking about all weather bumpers. Zanisti, the two horse, who is a half brother to Coltrane. It's obviously a very good flat horse as well. Right, the 2 o'clock is the Fleur-de-Lis. Now, as we record on Friday, Bristol Demai is still in the race. He's obviously been declared under the assumption Haydock might be abandoned, so he may or may not be a non-runner by the time we're talking about this. This is a tricky little race, lads. Top rate is 159, Sam Brown. Bottom rated 154. 150, Kalashnikov. But basically, £9 between the lot of them, and Sam Brown, I don't think, is running to 159. So, Ruby, this is a bit of a puzzle.
It is a bit of a puzzle, and I'm taking a chance on one, and I'm going to forgive him for a pretty disappointing run on his last start, and that's Brave Shashka. I think he'll have the pace to travel right behind these. Now, he reopposes Stolen Silver, who's a long way in front of him at Cheltenham on New Year's Day, but I'm going to take a chance on Brave Shashka. Kalashnikov, it's a while since he's shown something, 2 for gold, the same. Sam Brown is not getting any younger. A great first run at Weatherby. His next run behind Noble Yates, who's beaten a country mile. Bristol Demai, we already spoke about. So I narrowed it down to Stolen Silver and Brave Shashka, and I'm going to side with Venetia's horse at the weights.
Yeah, he does get £8 from Stolen Silver, which I guess, Rory, kind of that penalty, Stolen Silver, he's the up-and-comer, isn't he, of this bunch, but he's giving weight away.
Yeah, he is, and that does make it difficult for him. He bounced back to form when second in that big handicap at Cheltenham on New Year's Day, having unseated when favourite for the Paddy Power. He's got to prove that he wants the extra yardage as well. He does stay 2.5 on bad ground, but this will be a fair test of stamina at the unusual 2 mile 6 trip. I'm inclined to go with, obviously Bristol Demai could come out and win this after winning at
of course, Hader,
of course. But
that's trying to make the wife feel good.
But I'm going to go 2 for gold. He won the race last year. I thought he did it nicely then. He handles heavy ground well. He ran even better on his next start when he was staying on second in the Ascot Chase. Plenty of horses didn't handle the conditions or get home that day, but he kept plugging away. The question with him, he's certainly improved for headgear. He gets more severe headgear here with a visor on for the first time. I think that will suit him because he can be a little bit lazy. And I think while it's always a little bit dangerous for a horse of his age to be wearing blinkers or a visor for the first time, it's not usually a positive. I would take the gamble that actually it would work for him. It'll sharpen him up a little bit. He wasn't disgraced in the Grand Theft. And, you know, he again, raced lazily, made quite hard work of that, but kept plugging away. And if the visor works and just keeps him interested early, then he'll be staying on by far the best of these, I would think. And given he's proven over course and distance, I think he's the one to be with.
Fair enough. Okay, so votes for 2 for Gold to win it back-to-back and Brave Shashka for being the Fleur de Lis. Of course, Bristol Mike could win Haydock, run down the M6, win the race. He doesn't stop galloping, that fella. So
absolutely.
Yeah, you never know. Well, we do know he's only going to run one of them. Sovereign Handicap Hurdle, 230, another huge pot, 110 grand. The top weight is Might Eye for Harry Fry. The bottom weight is Tour de Cerise for Michael Scudamore. I've only had the cursory glance at this, lads. Jetto looked interesting for Anish Williams, very lightly raced. Lebowski, great movie. Rory?
Yeah, I wouldn't rule out Mai Tai. He disappointed me a little bit last time out, but Harry Fry won this with Metier in background last year. Mai Tai also seems to be very well suited by very deep ground. And of course, was favourites to beat Constitution Hill at Sandown last season over hurdles when Constitution Hill made his debut.
Did he win?
He didn't win that. No.
Oh, okay.
All right. The clue is in the question, as they say. But yeah, he was far from disgraced. I mean, getting beaten 14 lengths by Might I, having traded odds on and running as well, by Constitution Hill, having traded odds on, is a pretty good performance. As you saw, as the season wore on, he wasn't particularly. He ran in the Rossington Main this weekend last year behind John Bond. And I could see him bouncing right back to his best on very deep ground. So I respect him despite a big weight. But I'm going to side with Jello, who was better than the result at Sandown last time out. Now, he bolted up on his British debut at Exeter off a very lenient mark of 114. Venetia Williams spoke after that race and made it clear that she thought that mark was very lenient. She couldn't keep the smile off her face. But he was turned out quickly under a penalty because he's going to go up a lot in the weights, and he was beaten under a penalty at Haydock. That just came too soon for him, I think. He bounced back to form despite being beaten again at Sandown last time out. I thought he was better than the result there. Again, Sandown's one of those tracks you don't want to be making late mistakes when you're trying to come from off the pace. He seemed to be travelling well between the last two hurdles, then made a mistake at the last, which halted his momentum, but kept on again up the hill to be beaten 3 lengths into third. I thought that was better than it looked. That was over a dead 2 miles. His win at Exeter came over 2 1/4, and he clearly stays pretty well. So although this is still 2 miles, I think it'll be, with the ground the way it is, I think it'll be a reasonable test. I'd still think he'd be a 2.5 miler in time, but he suggested at Sandown that despite having gone up £15 for his Exeter win, that he was still capable of winning handicaps off this mark. It's a pound higher again. That was a strong race at Sandown. It was a slightly oddly run race, and they went very slow early on, and then they sort of quickened up from the home turn. I'm not sure that suited the tactics that they used on Jello that day, and I think more of an end-to-end gallop, which they should get here, will suit him better and bring his stamina into play better as well.
Jello, not Jetto, as I stupidly called him. Ruby?
I actually like Teddy Boy. Thought it was a good run at Newbury behind First Street and Grevitana. He got involved with Grevitana a long way from home, but I thought he kept going okay, and I thought back in what looks possibly a lesser race, albeit he has slightly more weight, I thought Teddy Boy for the local team of Gary and Jamie Moore could be the one.
Okay, all right, couple of votes there. Jello and Teddy Blue is the name of it. Sorry,
Teddy
Ruby.
Blue, sorry, not Teddy Blue. Teddy,
that's okay. Paul Nicholas
Dance. He only did that to make you feel better, PK.
I take no pleasure correcting Ruby Walsh. None at all.
Yeah, really.
Moving on to the Surrey National, which is due off at 3 o'clock. Obviously, marathon trip, 3 miles, 4 furlongs. Right, you've got Venetia Williams in this race with a couple, although Achilles still doesn't have a jockey jocked up, but Don Herbinger has got Charlie Deutsch. Ruby, to you for the Surrey National.
Yeah, bit like the amateur national at Punchestown last week. It just seems to be sticking the national on the end of a race for the sake of it. What did I think? I thought Fairlawn Flyer could be the improver for Sean and Peter Bone. Did it well, beat New Age Dawning at Fosslass in his last start, but I'm not sure how too many have much in hand in this contest.
Are you a fan of the Surrey National, Roy De Largy?
I don't mind the Surrey National sometimes. You have pedigrees don't really come into these races, but it's worth mentioning that Bells of Peterborough is a half-brother to Marine National. Not that that's suddenly going to make him run any faster at the age of eight, but I do like Bells of Peterborough as a project. I mentioned him when he ran at Chepstow. It was a really solid each way bet in a handicap hurdle there. He was placed in, he won the previous year, and he ran very well to be placed again. Now he's also engaged at Taunton at the weekend, so I don't know if he'll run here. He hasn't run on bad ground for a while, but he does handle heavy ground, and he stays all day. He kept on very well over 3.25 miles at Uttoxeter in November. He was back over hurdles last time out, but he won't mind switching back to fences. I think the race is in at Taunton, it's over hurdles. I thought he would run a decent race if he runs here, but he's not guaranteed to do that. I don't particularly like Venetia's horses in this. Achilles seems to be, or Achille, however you want to say it, seems to be.
Who is calling it that? Who's calling it Achille?
That's what he's been called
in
the
sake.
UK. When he runs in the UK, he tends to be called Achille because it says FR after his name. So, you know, make it sound as French as possible. Those are the rules. and Don Herberger is a tricky ride. Charlie Deutsch can sometimes get the best out of him, but he's not the easiest. And although he stays very well, I wouldn't trust him implicitly. So Bells of Peterborough, for me, again, not the most confident of shouts, and a possibility that he won't run if Taunton goes ahead.
Look, that's caveat for a lot of the races we're talking about. Like, for example, the 3:30 at Lingfield, which is 100 grand conditions hurdle, there are three tipple. Jason Militant has declared that as well. I know you fancy him on the Saturday. Yep. Nell's son has declared there and a Haydock. Metier runs in that race in First Street. And Goshen, by the way.
Well, it's very odd that Goshen is in the race because he ran off the track last year when he came to this meeting. And it was after that Gary Moore said he won't be going left-handed again.
He can still run off and finish second for 24 grand.
Well, that's the thing. I think that's what it comes down to. Sometimes you look at this race, think it might be fairly weak. Over the longer trip is a little bit of a help as well. So, you know, he could not handle the track and still run reasonably well. Gary was still talking about running him over fences again after it went wrong at Ascot. But I don't think so.
No.
Well, it's for the first time as well.
Yep.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, we'll keep an eye out for Goshen at 3:30. It's a hot little race, but it's a 100 grand race. It should be. First Street, obviously the improver, and Molly's Ollie's Wishes is there as well. As last year's winner of the Sovereign in Metier. Right. Third is going ahead. Of course it is. It always goes ahead. And on Sunday, we've got a couple of graded races there. The first two on the card, the 110 is the Coolmore-sponsored Mayor's Novice Chase, a grade two. There was a few entries for Willie Mullins, but he relies solely on the very impressive looking Allegory Devassi. You spoke about her on Road to Cheltenham with Lydia on Thursday, Ruby. Her jumping was very good, and she's going to be a short price favourite.
Yeah, she's hard to oppose. Bride's Hill is probably the only real one maybe you could put up against her, who chased home Journey With Me at Nace, which was a better run from Bride's Hill. And Journey With Me has subsequently stepped forward with a good run behind Impervious last weekend. But yeah, I think Allegory Devassi will be hard to beat.
Yeah, she will.
She'll be priced accordingly. So I'm not exactly, that's just stating the obvious.
Yeah, she's going to be odds on, and significant odds on. But I think it should be more competitive in the second race, the 140, the Horse and Jockey Hotel, formerly the Kinloch Bray. A grade two over 2.5 miles, used to be Aloha. Did Aloha win this, or was it Clonmilloy? I can't remember.
No, this as well. Aloha won it twice. Obviously, Shaq and Pursois steps up and trip for the first time for Willie Mullins. He's had 14 runs for Willie, I think, all at 2 miles. 12 of those have been in grade ones. And he steps up now to 2.5 miles for the first time. Looks like he needs a step up and trip. He's getting harder to place. Unseated in the champion chase. No match for Enogamina. Punches down and well beaten by Blue Lord of Christmas. 2.5 could bring about improvement in him, but he is 11. Fakir Dudari is the ideal scenario for Fakir Dudari. But No, he hasn't. Of course, he won at Ascot, but Fakir Dudari definitely has a chance. I'm not sure Punchestown is Fakir Dudari's track for some reason. I think a lot of his substandard runs have been at Punchestown. So I think Thurles, he made a mistake here early last year and then they could never get a glove on Alaho, but he's a very, very good horse. But the one that probably will interest me at the prices is Hotong Kalour, getting the weight from Fakir and Shaq and Pursuit. I thought he ran okay in the John Durkin behind Gallop and the Champ. He was dropped in. He's only a 6-year-old, going up in triple suit him. Has a fair bit to find on the ratings, but I wouldn't be surprised if he was the one to chase home either Shakin or Fakir.
All right, I'm going to nail your colours and ask Fakir to beat Fakir to win?
Probably, yeah.
It's about as good as
I think
really
it's hard. It's,
it's a good race. Six,
but it is a decent race, yeah. There's no doubt about that. And look, you've Lifetime Ambition and French Dynamite who like to go along. So does Shakin Pursuit. There'll be plenty of pace here and it's going to get into stamina. Only one fence in the straight in Thurles now where there used to be two a couple of years ago. So stamina's going to come into it. I think Shakin wants the trip, but he's really going to have to stay.
Yeah, fascinating little contest. Halt and Clore should be a decent price if you do fancy that at a bit of a price. Might be double figures, but we'll keep an eye off that. The former Kinloch Bray, now the Horse and Jockey Hotel, grade two. Roy, before I dig into the lesser Willie Mullins declarations, anything on that? It's okay.
I'd be with Fakir Doudry. I need Fakir Doudry to beat Royal Rendezvous because I've just done a piece on Energumen for the Irish Fields Festival magazine, and I had a chat with Sandy Shaw, and we were talking about how Grade One horses will always win handicaps, and how the best horses are underrated because when horses win handicaps, they tend to go up in the weights, and when Grade One horses win races easily, you tend to assume they should have done that anyway, and they stay in the same sort of rating. And as an illustration of that, he said, "Here we go, Fakir Doudry and Royal Rendezvous have the same handicap mark, but Fakir Doudry is clearly much better. So if Royal Rendezvous finished in front of Fakir Doudry, have to tear the whole thing up and start again."
When's the deadline?
Well, you don't, because you just that and that. I had that conversation with Sandy Shaw in Punchestown last year after Royal Rendezvous won the handicap chase.
Yes.
So I said, how do you keep pushing him up? I mean, and Fakir was the one we used on the same day.
Yeah. Because he'd beaten him in the Clonmel Oil easily, giving him weight. Yeah.
And Royal Rendezvous, an easy game on that occasion, were both rated 161. Both had race fitness on their sides. And Fakir did already kick them out of the way. So it is a tricky one. I don't know. To me, it's how long is a piece of string? But
yeah, I mean, this is it. But what it demonstrates is that from a handicapping point of view, you're right. You can't not put a horse up for winning a competitive handicap. Royal Rendezvous won a grade A handicap at Punchestown. Therefore, he has to be higher than 160. Maybe just put him back up to 161, 162. But you get the impression that the gap between him and a proper grade one horse is higher because the handicappers can sort of climb up the handicap by winning races when things are in their favour. But it's difficult to really get a handle on how good genuinely top class horses are unless they run in handicaps, and they rarely do these days.
Do you go way more radical, Rory? So instead of putting up Royal Rendezvous when you know he's not good enough to beat Fakir Doudry, do you just drop
the others behind him? Yeah. Well, that's the thing. You either have to take the view that the one flaw in the handicapping system is handicappers on both sides of the Irish Sea will say you can't drop a horse for winning a race, whereas there are some handicaps that are very uncompetitive and none of those horses are well handicapped, and yet the winner's always going to go up. Maybe these days, sometimes horses only go up 1 or 2 pounds for winning races, but there is an argument that just because horses won a race doesn't mean that it's at all well handicapped, and you could be dropping them and just dropping the others in behind by more.
So just to continue this, I mean, I know it's not the platform. Why or where is the rule that says you cannot drop a horse for winning a race?
There's no rule. It's just an approach that the handicapping team tends to have. Phil Smith, I remember having this discussion with Phil Smith a few years ago, and he said, I never couldn't drop a horse. I mean, I might leave a horse on its mark, but I wouldn't drop a horse for winning a race. But there are races where a horse is 20 lengths behind and is left clear at the last. You'd have to drop it for that, wouldn't you?
I would have thought so.
Yeah, but it doesn't tend to happen.
I'd agree, because to me, the theory, I could be wrong, Rory, the theory behind handicapping is to try and get them all to finish in a line.
Yeah.
That's the essence. So therefore, just putting up the ones at the front doesn't seem to be working over jumps because we never get them all finishing in the line. So to me, it has to change the approach, the mindset. It has to be the other one's going down. And if that means the horses at the very bottom get pushed down to ridiculously low marks, so be it. Otherwise, we're just going to keep going up and up and up. And to put your theory into practice regards Fakir du Dairi and Royal Rendezvous, and we'll see what happens on Sunday, that essentially means you have to go Fakir du Dairi to 174 or 5 to get him far enough of Royal Rendezvous in a handicap. So that means you have to go to Alaho at 190 something or other, 95 or 6. I mean, where is the roof? So if you put...
Well, if you start with this, you go all the way back to the reason that Arkle and Flying Bolt are rated as high, or rated by Timeform as highly as they were. The handicapping system didn't have official marks then. Everything was just done ad hoc, as it were. But yeah, they ended up with really high marks because they were giving 3 stone to high-class handicappers and beating them, and therefore you have to rate them 40 and 50 pounds higher than those horses because that's what they've done. It doesn't happen these days. So there are plenty of horses who might have got reasonably close to what Arkle has done, but I've never been in a situation where you can mathematically prove that. And it's a massively flawed system. Of course it is.
And I just even was looking, and it was got me even thinking about it, was the Kerry National. So when you looked at Hewick and his rating, what he carried to be top weight in the Munster National, he actually was rated higher when he lined up for winning the Galway Plate in the Kerry National than Doran's Pride had been when Doran's Pride won the Kerry National with top weight. Yeah. Hewick was rated higher. So I won it on a top weight called Euro Leader, who was rated 131 when he carried top weight. Now, there's no way on earth Hewick would have given Euro Leader 30 pounds. But that is how ratings have kept inflating and inflating. And they're just going up, and there's no deflation to bring them all back down. I think the whole thing has to be completely deflated, like the economy.
Yes. You've had this issue over the years that if you sort of look back and see what marks horses winning off in the late 80s, going through sort of Racing Post database, for example, you'll see handicap marks are listed as sort of 29 and 30 because we now have a completely different system. So it's not like we don't know what handicap marks really good horses were given in the early 80s or the 1970s because they weren't published. So we don't quite know where we are historically. The one thing we have that's reasonably constant, at least Timeform have used the same methodology over the years to give these horses their ratings. So you can compare what they've done now with what they did 20, 30, 40 years ago. You can disagree with individual ratings, but the methodology has stayed the same. So they've deliberately done that. So they're keeping the same scale. And we haven't had that, with the BHA and their predecessors. They've not been using the same scale. So it's very hard to make historical comparisons. But your point is a really valid one. You need to have a system that absolutely works. And at the moment, it's kind of a how long is a piece of string type approach.
It is, but then again, if you look at it in the other sense, and we watch a lot of races, but if I said to you, to me, even when you look and people say, oh, Stateman last year, but to me, how on earth any human being was supposed to put a mark on Stateman after what they'd seen because the rules say they have to is ludicrous.
Yes.
How you can be expected to handicap a horse off 3 runs is beyond me. It should be 5 and 6 before you are required to give them a mark till you actually have seen it and can at least judge it. And then you have novices getting in that are beating handicappers and they're just shooting up and up because it is not new to me. That's backing up the handicappers. It's not possible to give them accurate marks.
No. So to recap, Fakir du Dairi wins. that was really interesting. Obviously, as a son of a handicapper, I'm just happy to sit down and listen. I'll send this bit on to Dad. He'd be delighted. To give context, Sandy Shaw, who the lads are talking about, is the Irish jumps handicapper, who the lads were discussing. That was really good. Enjoyed that.
And Sandy and his deputy, I suppose, Shea Quinn, like, they are pretty easy men to talk to, and can have these conversations with them. And, you know, it's probably the one job within the establishments in the BHA or the IHRB where opinion counts. They're the people that have to have an opinion. Everybody else follows rules. So they are interesting jobs, and fair play to them for trying to do it because it's not easy.
It's not easy. not speaking from experience, but yeah, I saw Dad go through some tough times. Some trainers get in contact a little bit more than others.
Your name's mentioned there.
Not a chance. But really interesting chat. More of that, I'm sure, on the Countdown Cheltenham. I'll get it right one day. Next week on Tuesday, I'm sure, where we discuss that, or particularly actually when we get into the handicaps themselves. To go back to Thurles on Sunday, there's a few other declarations, I should say, for William Mullins. Ruby, looking at...
Before you get to Embassy Gardens at 3:10, Bell the Lioness sticks out in the 2:40 PK for Henry de Bromhead and Rachel Blackmore. It's an auction series made in hurdles. She chased home Liberty Dance here in a novice hurdle before Christmas and followed Intranet in a maiden hurdle at Punchestown. She sticks out like a sore thumb in the 2:40, which is the Red Mills Irish EBF auction maiden hurdle series. It's a qualifier for the final, obviously. And then as you were looking through, it's Embassy Gardens you were looking for in the 3:10. He's still a maiden. He was second to It's What Unites Us at Cork. Jumping let him down a little bit and then ran that really good maiden hurdle at Leperstown over Christmas, the 2.5 mile on the last day, where Goodland beat Tagman, Search for Glory, Embassy Gardens, Madman's Game of Well beaten fifth. That run, I think, will give him a good chance of at least giving Santanito a race. And I'm not surprised Willie has gone down the novice route with him. I think he's a bit shy on Albert Barton horses, and maybe the fact that he's sticking this lad in here could be a hint as to what he's trying to make him into.
And we see the return of Billaway in the Hunter Chase.
Got well turned over in this race last year by Winged Leader, beaten by 12 lengths on that occasion. And again, where's the cheap pieces that he now wears regularly, but he's 11 years of age and he's not getting any easier to get him fit. David Porter, who rides Fast Alviga and Blue Lord, rides this fella as well. But he did improve for the run here last year. He went to Nace and beat Good by Sam in February. I would imagine he's following the similar programme. Thurles in January, Nace in February, Cheltenham in March, Punchestown in April. I imagine that'll be his plan, but I think he will improve for the run again tomorrow. And David Christie, who trained Wing Leader and was unlucky not to beat Billaway with Vossalay at Punchestown, has Ferns Lock in here. Only a 6 year old, has won twice this year, hasn't run since November when it beat It's On The Line at Fairy House in a Hunter's Chase. But Ferns Lock looks to be going the right direction, and David Christie has to be respected in Hunter Chases.
Yeah, he goes very well. Trainer, very much to be respected. You mentioned the work rider or the who rides. Was it Fasal Vega? Who else?
Billaway. I think he rides Blue Lord most Blue Lord. As well.
I hope he doesn't ride Billaway.
His cousin plays in the front row for Ireland.
Oh, what was the second name? Sorry?
Porter.
Oh, Andrew Porter's cousin. Lovely. I hope he doesn't ride Billaway third lot after riding Fasal Vega and Blue Lord. And then you get on the Hunter Chase and you go, ooh, a bit slow.
No, he rides in Porter.
Oh, fourth. Okay, right. Ooh, still a bit slow. Jeez, this one's slower than the others. right, so keep an eye on. I'd say that forecast that Billaway Ferns Lock could be worth a look, or reverse forecast even. Those two should go quite well. I think that's it, lads. We just need the best bet of opened up to the weekend, really. Rory, your best bet? Do you want to pass to
Ruby? It's go to Ruby. Hate to go ahead. No, that wouldn't be the best bet, would it? Go to Ruby and come back.
Okay, Ruby, best bet of the weekend.
Just for winners, Sean Valley Kid, It's For Me. They'll be very hard to beat in Navin, both of those. So would Bell the Lioness and Allegory the Vassy at Thurles. But as regards one to have something each way that you might get a run for your money, Barnacullia.
That is going to be a big price. That's in the 107 at Navin. Barnacully, each way nap, and then a couple of doubles as well from Ruby there on Saturday and Sunday. Now you've had time, Rory.
Well, see, if Ruby's going to go Barnacully, and mm-hmm. I completely get that. I really ought to go head to head there. Well, you know, and look at a meeting that might has got more
Rory,
chance going ahead.
Now, Rory, know what you do now. Pull out a third one there, and we'll get the trifecta in that.
Exactly. Let's do that now. So it's a Carrigeen Lotus. In that race for Keane Quirk,
Carrigeen Lotus, Barnacullia, and the third one we're going to pull out of this handicap hurdle trifecta is God Only Knows.
another lightly weighted one, eh?
Well, it's hardly going to be Grand Wa. Is it Maxine or Michael rides the Grand Wa? I can't see. C.O. Sullivan.
Michael, I'd say.
I'd say it's Michael.
And then it is Michael.
Lucky Max to get in the TriCast.
Well, he's your pick, so
yeah.
Oh yeah, if he's your pick, we've had one
each. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
There's a tremendous trifecta.
Tricast.
Just to really annoy the lads in the trading room, have a look at the trifecta and the tricast prices, and then go whichever one you like. PK hangs up.
You're just great. No, Mark Walsh hang up. Don't mind. I don't mind. Ruby's on mute there for some reason. Right. So there's the. I can't even. Those naps are next best. Just press rewind on the podcast there and you'll get them. And if you want Ruby's two doubles, one on Saturday, one on Sunday, Barnaculia. And to be fair, your actual nap, Rory, was it going to be the one in the Carrigeen Lotus, wasn't it?
Yes, Carrigeen Lotus.
In the 107. So back to, lads, you're taking each other on for your naps. Unbelievable. And
that right. Is very much each way. You'd be delighted to hear.
It's an extra place race, so we'll definitely go each way. Lads, that was great. I really enjoyed the chat about the handicapping. And as I said, I'll send that on to Dad. He'd be delighted to listen to it. He does text me, Ruby. He says, did you hear Ruby was talking about this horse in relation to its ratings? I was like, yeah, he does that a lot. Yeah, he kind of looks at the ratings. It's very interesting, isn't it? It's like, yeah, well done, Dad. We're recording Monday. We'll be back on Tuesday around noon for our second episode. That will be on the Paddy Power YouTube, Paddy Power Racing YouTube channel. Sorry, Mark. I cannot get these names right. Paddy Power Racing YouTube channel around 12 on Tuesday afternoon. Watch out for our second episode of the Cheltenham Counter.
Just sent me a message. He's getting Tom Nugent back.
That is a fair message to send. I can totally understand it. If you haven't listened to Fridays with Fran at this stage, do so. We covered Dundalk this evening and on Friday evening, obviously. And we'll be back next week. And I'm really looking forward to have a great weekend, everyone. Don't forget, free tickets for Dublin Racing Festival. Listen back to the start. I'll give you details or in the show notes. Rory, have a great weekend. Ruby, have a great weekend. We will see you both next week.